Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
What most people think.
Hello and welcome to episode 8 of What Most People Think. My name is Jeff Norcott. A stand-up comedian. This is my podcast, and this week, we've got a good guest today. We've got a great guest. We've got the best guest. We've got Romesh Ranganathan. Now, he is a mate and stuff, but he's also incredibly busy. So it was just good to sit down with him and have a chat. We started off talking about detailed stuff about his show that he's doing at the moment, the Ranganathan, about how he approaches comedy, how he feels about veganism. And raising 3 boys, and we had some really good detailed chat. And then, we got to the letters section, and it's I wouldn't normally issue a health warning on one of my podcasts, but it's pretty raw. So there are a couple of moments where you might, if you like to have the volume up, just be conscious of of people around. Definitely stay tuned, because it was a real riot at the end. So if you are just here for Romesh, this bit, I'm just going to have a quick chat at the front of the show, because I like to catch up on the politics side of things. We are, of course, in the aftermath of the European elections, where, let's be honest, the Remain side pretty much lost their minds, didn't they? I mean, this is the weird thing, I've always harboured this nagging sort of suspicion, if I'm honest, that maybe Remainers are better than me. I know that's weak to admit that, but I'm just throwing it out there, that maybe they are the sober ones, the rational ones, the ones that are more trustworthy with numbers. In my weaker moments, that is a doubt that I harbour. But I maybe that once was the case. Who knows? But man, after those European elections, I don't think that anymore. How can you continue to make snarky comments about numbers on the side of a bus when you can't read numbers on a bar graph? I've never seen anything like it. I was really, really surprised by the sort of head in the sand reaction from some, not all Remainers, but from some quarters. I mean, I was watching Channel 4, actually. I was watching Vince Cable getting interviewed by Krishnan Guru Murphy. And Krishnan Guru Murphy put it to Vince Cable that the Brexit Party had won the election. And Vince Cable disputed that. He took issue with that idea. And you're like, no, Vince, they definitely did win the election. I mean, you could argue about, if you wish, about certain other sort of composite numbers, but they really, really did win the election. And I wonder if now, once Vince and the Lib Dems have adopted a kind of populist type slogan like bollocks to Brexit, right? That, why not go, once you've had a taste of that, right, you've broke the seal, why not go full sort of Chemical Alley like that guy from the Iraq War and just claim that there are no tanks in Baghdad. How can you not count the Tories? That's what I want to know. If you're totting up all the votes that were for Leave voting parties and all the votes that are from Remain, right, you can exclude Labour potentially, even though officially their line is that they want to leave, but just exclude them for the sake of argument, right? How can you exclude the Tories? The whole reason that they're in disarray is because they've been trying to deliver Brexit. The whole reason that their leader is now looking for summer work is because they've been trying and failing to deliver Brexit. So I don't know. I think that what it proved in a way is that the percentage of people that will vote for Leave is still higher. That after everything, after all the Project Fear, after after everything that's happened over the last 3 years, it's still higher. But people won't accept it. It's becoming bizarre. You know, if you look back, actually, I mean, you look back to, in terms of the way that the public feel about Europe, you look back to 2014, UKIP won, right? 2015, the Tories won with a promise of a referendum. 2016, the referendum was won by Leave. 2017, the two main parties promising to deliver Brexit received more than 80% of the vote. 2019, the Brexit Party win comprehensively. And more people voted for Leave parties than Remain party. And what is the response of the ultra Remainers to all this? It's like, well, we need a confirmatory vote. I feel there's been a lot of confirmation. Okay, at what point? You know, the other thing as well, right? If you are a Remainer, listen to this, right? First up, thank you for being somebody who's willing to get outside the FBPE echo chamber. And I'm like you. Like, I have Remainers that I follow, you know, the one people that I see as sensible, and I hope that maybe you don't see me as sensible, but there are some people on the Leave side that you look to as a sort of a temperature gauge just to kind of calibrate your own ideas. But as I looked around my favoured sensible Remainers, I sort of dipped my toe in the water, but they were all jumping sharks. They were all jumping sharks. And I started to think, you know, maybe actually one of the main reasons not to have a second referendum is that it would actually be better for the mental health of Remainers, right? Because they, you know, some of them, especially the ones that have really disappeared down the rabbit hole, they've now spent so much time in this kind of hall of mirrors, right? Having their own views reflected back to them, that it seems so anathema to them that anybody could ever still want to leave the European Union, that if there was a second referendum, I think it might push them over the edge. I think it would genuinely push them over the edge. So I think that it's much better that that referendum never happens, right? So they can kind of go on with the idea that if it had happened, they would have won. You know, they're kind of like a prize fighter that got stopped in the 6th, 7th, and 8th round, right? But they, you know, technically they were never knocked out. So they can go, oh, if I just had one more round, I would have landed that haymaker. Maybe if the referee, you know, the match referee hadn't noticed that my eyeball was like fucking lying on my cheek. I went into those election results thinking maybe if there is a sea change, you know, if the Remain parties win 60% of the vote, maybe even someone like me needs to be, you know, start reassessing my view of a second referendum. But it didn't happen, you know. And just before we get into the chat with Romesh, just a quick thank you and a fuck you from this week. I went to see Eric Prydz at Finsbury Park in London. It was a great event. I do like my dance music and stuff. And I want to say thank you to all the people who came up and recognised me, all six of them. It was 15,000 people there. It's not a great ratio, let's be honest. But they were all sort of lefties and they were all Remainers. But like mostly is the case. Once you get outside of Twitter, people are cool. But I have to say fuck you to the one guy. There's one guy that's like, oi, Tory boy. Oi, you know, started giving me shit. But it was as we were standing by these shit, you know, these urinals, you know, these outdoor urinals and stuff. So he's sort of standing next to me. It's sort of good-natured banter. I go, hey, you fucking Tory. It didn't really go beyond just reminding me that I was a Tory. But the main problem with it was that he was doing all this while I had my cock in my hand. And I don't think that that's fair. I don't think it's possible for me to be on my toes with my... And then he was sort of saying, oh, where's your banter? Where's your banter? Where my cock is in my hand is what's happening, mate. So I thank you. I fuck you to that guy. Listen, I will be... we're going to get the chat with Romesh started now. I'll be chipping in to hype a couple of my specific tour shows. And then, as ever, I'll be reading out one of the iTunes ratings at the end. But please, for now, enjoy the chat with the one and only Romesh Ranganathan. So here we are, we've got Romesh Ranganathan as the guest. I knew that the first bit would be tricky. I don't know why, because we've been hanging out.
Yeah.
So it's going to be weird to create this construct where we're talking as people that have just met. But thanks for coming on my show.
Thanks for having me on, man. I've been hearing big things about this thing.
It's called What Most People Think.
Yes. You know?
It's about democracy, mate.
Who did the music?
Who did the music was Steve Shanyasky, the comedian. Do you like the music?
I like the music, and I like Steve.
I like where they go, Steve. This is how comedy works. He's also got a nom de plume called Subdiffuse. That's what he makes.
So is the music by Steve or by Subdiffuse for this podcast?
That's a really good point. I haven't actually established that with
because
him.
you might have undermined the
point. Yeah, artists do work under various different guises at different times in their career. And you know what the bad thing is that I've had the music in this episode 8. That's the first time I've directly hyped him by name.
Yes.
I should have done that by now.
I would argue the etiquette when somebody's done the music for your podcast is to definitely mention it sooner than
I pay you. Today.
Yeah, but still, you know, it's nice to credit an artist for their work, isn't it?
Yeah, I said that a bit too defensively. I paid him. Paid him loads, mate.
Yeah, so, buyout. Was it complete buyout?
Done. It was a complete buyout. Internet.
So that means you can use your music for whatever you want?
Yes, and I have actually...
If this got made into a TV show...
Yeah, I have actually sold the music on to a completely unrelated American format.
Well, that's worked out well, hasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm just...
I imagine that will upset old Subdiffuse a little bit.
Well, Subdiffuse, Steve's fine with it.
Right, okay.
Steve is absolutely cool with it.
Subdiffuse, on the other hand, is fucking furious.
Is fucking...
anyway, well, thanks for having me on, mate.
No, well, listen, I thought that your sort of career needed this, a leg up, and not least because you're doing a show at the moment called The Ranga Nation. Now, yes. I think that this dovetails quite nicely with what I've got going on. What most people think, right, about like views from the ground up, from the muggles, the plebs, right? Not that I'm calling the Ranga Nation that.
No, but you're sort of implying
it. It's implied, it's out there. And I think what you see as well, that you don't see on telly much, is comparing quick-minded skills.
Yeah.
So when you work with them, you're clearly thinking on your feet. I think that when people watch a lot of telly now, even with the topical stuff, a lot of these things have been on so long that the public know that, you know, kind of know what the subjects might be in various comments and stuff.
Yeah.
But there's no denying that you're doing this stuff in real time.
Man. Yes. I mean, I do benefit from an edit. So, you know, if I do, like, drop a brick, that gets quickly sort of whipped away like a mother in labour curling one out. Do you know what I mean? Just sort of... The dogs. I don't know why I use that.
It's a good question about mother in labour curling one out. Do you think in that situation people ever get confused and name it? Just a moment of panic in the delivery room. Going,
yeah, I imagine that.
Gareth. And then it gets taken out, but...
Just the humiliation of the father. Yeah. Oh, he's gorgeous. it is... look, the truth is that it's one of the most fun shows I've ever done. Do you know what I mean? For that reason, really. It's sort of... You don't know what's going to happen when you go into the records. And that sounds like I'm presenting some sort of like...
Wacky.
Yeah, I know. You just don't know what's going to happen in the studio. It's crazy.
Don't forget your toothbrush.
Yeah, exactly. No, it is really good fun. And the Ranga Nation are amazing. I mean, they're so good. Do you know what I mean? So you always know you're going to get good stuff from them. It's really good fun. But but at the same time, you do sort of shit yourself a bit because you sort of think... you can prep to a point, but then beyond that, you sort of think like it's very much how good that show will be is very much dependent on the unknown. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
How those chats are going to go, what they're going to give you, how you're going to respond to all that. So it's sort of exciting, but also I say frightening. I mean, none of what we're doing is important, is it, in the grand scheme of things? But
no,
do you
but
know
I think
what
it's
mean?
Timely. I think that's the thing about the show that's nice. Obviously, I love political humour. I like doing political humour, but it's nice seeing something come out from more of a social commentary angle.
Yeah.
And I think the great thing is, obviously, I think the show's got like the most bankable acting British comedy at the moment.
Mate,
Which is your mum.
Oh my god! What?
Did I actually?
I walked straight into that, man. You're right. I mean, I don't know, like, the last... Yeah. Like, she is just... like, all seriousness, like, whenever I'm interviewed, when it's not a mate, I sort of go, well, you know, it slightly pisses me off. But it does slightly piss me off.
Well, it takes a long time to get good at this job,
and then,
right?
Like, she just sort of, like, has become... She just sort of nailed her character. No, I say her character.
Just persona.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, she knows her beat. She knows her comedy wheelhouse.
It's like... It's amazing.
You start to think that maybe like it really does come from her.
It's funny you say that, right? Because I never thought it did. Because like my dad, who no longer with us, but my dad used to be very much like me. He'd have that sort of cutting kind of, you know, our senses of humour are very similar. And my mum never was. I didn't think that my mum was like that. And it's now that I started to realise, shit, she is funny, man. Like, do you know what I mean? I'd sort of, when we did Asia Provocateur, did this travel show, for anyone that doesn't know, the travel show where I went to Sri Lanka and my mum sort of sent me in. When she was being funny on that show, I just assumed it was accidental. You know, I just assumed that she was just being herself and it's just the edit and the context of it made it funny. Yeah. But now, as we've gone on, I realise that I didn't give her the credit that she
deserved.
And
she was operating, she was running a fully
writer's
room. Yeah. With, like, some of the
best. Yeah. She's just working on gear, like, every night. You know what I mean? But yeah, so I don't think I gave her the credit she deserves. She's she is just like, on Ranga Nation, I don't want to jinx her, I get nervous for her, but she's like been great so far, man.
No, I've seen the episodes, they're wicked. And I think that, like, in terms of, like, the monologue and stuff, is that what I loved particularly about the first episode is that it's weird because you're not one of these comedians, you are of the left, you are of the Remain side.
Yes.
But it does seem that your own side bug you sometimes.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, I actually think because you and I have worked so much together, it may have, I'm not saying you've infected me, but you have, I would credit you, my friendship with you, for giving me a bit of perspective on that, because I think that the left are guilty of not being aware of their own hypocrisy sometimes when it comes to sort of pointing out the flaws that they perceive to be on the right of things. And I just think that because if you boil things down to their very, very basics, the left are seen as caring and philanthropic, and the right are seen as self-serving. You know, that's the stereotypes of those sides.
Yeah.
The left feel that they can do no wrong. And I think that increasingly has been the case. And I have seen the left on social media and just in their general attitudes say things that I think are offensive or are wrong, just fueled by their own self-righteousness.
Yeah.
And they've allowed that self-righteousness to maybe cloud their judgment. Do you know what I mean? And I find that sort of slightly frustrating. But it hasn't changed my positioning on things particularly. But I just think that it's dangerous to become completely entrenched in a set of ideas.
It's a dangerous thing to think that you are beyond reproach.
Exactly.
And I think that what you're describing sounds to me a little bit like, you know, like when you've got the same ticket at a football ground.
Yeah.
And you're all supporting the same team.
Yeah.
But there's nothing more fucking annoying than the people you have to sit with.
Every week, that guy
at the back that just sees it overly simplistically.
Yeah.
Like, for God's sake, finger, why don't you just go for it? We're going because, you know, there are pitfalls in any formation. Mate.
Yeah, yeah, I know. And I think I initially kind of started to feel like that straight after the referendum because, you know, I was surprised. I went through all of those feelings, but the thing that surprised me the most, I think, was how the left spoke about people that had voted for Brexit. And, you know, I think that while it is true that some, you know, I think it's true that people are ill-informed and a lot of people, we know a lot more now about the ramifications potentially of Brexit or not than we did before the referendum. Weirdly, we've done our research after the vote. But I think that I think that to assume that an entire side, the voting majority, have all operated in complete ignorance, I found it disappointing, actually. Do you know what I mean? And that sort of thing that they're all racist or, you know, whatever. It didn't sit right with me, really.
Well, I suppose one of the dangers of what happened here is maybe we're seeing now, like the recent Euro elections. I know that we'll discuss it in a minute. You were sort of like surprised by like the percentages overall that were still for Leave and Remain, but also slightly amused by how little things have moved. And I wonder if the reason that it hasn't moved was because it was almost the die was cast in those few weeks after the elections. When rather than keeping, you know, when you have a row with the missus and you say things that can't be left unsaid.
Yes.
So the issue with, like, you know, if Leave voters are criticising Remain voters, is often things like, you fucking Linseed Liberal cunts, you know what I mean? You're fucking skis on. But ultimately, you're not being accused of the worst.
You really, do you know, as you sort of went into that,
yeah,
I really felt like sort of you looked like you were liberated, you know, there's a line,
yeah, yeah,
there's a phone.
Just relax, Jesus. People. They often accuse me of playing a character. Well, the character I'm playing is that I'm less right wing than I am in real life.
Yeah. Can I just verify? Jeff Norcott is one of my best mates, and this shit ain't a character.
Yeah, sadly, it's all true. It's very regressive. Even today, there were comments. Not like racism, obviously.
No, but of course
we're
not.
Okay, but sexism, you know. I mean, sexism's a funny one, isn't it? Because, I mean, ultimately, it's definitely as bad as racism, isn't it? Right?
Yes.
However, it's still maintained a little comedy sort of vibe to it.
The thing about sexism is it's definitely as bad as racism. But it just doesn't have as much of a stigma as racism does. Do you know what I mean?
You can get away with it. Yeah.
So, like, you could say something sexist, I think, and people would sort of go, Jesus, and then laugh, and they wouldn't change their judgment. Depending on how sexist what you said was, they wouldn't bear. Whereas if you said something racist, they would go, Jesus, and then that story would get told. Do you know what I mean? Like, that, you're now racist, Jeff. Do you know what I mean? That is you now.
Yeah,
you know
whereas Are You Chio, it went a bit far. If rappers had said, if like 90s gangster rap, where a lot of it was about Jews, that wouldn't be, like, because I know a lot of really progressive people that allow themselves to enjoy that music, despite the misogyny.
Well, do you know what?
If there was a lot of anti-Semitism
in
90s hip-hop.
It's so funny, the thing about hip-hop, right, that really sort of shocked me is, like, I remember, like, when I started listening to hip-hop, I started listening to, like, Public Enemy. And Public Enemy, like, very much like, you know, I remember listening to Fight the Power, and they're very much about the black struggle. And Public Enemy are not misogynistic at all. But then when I went to listen to other hip-hop, I'd sort of come from Public Enemy as a starting point. And I remember listening to NWA, who were very misogynistic. And I remember thinking, I can't believe these guys are being sexist. Like, isn't this a struggle here? And, like, shouldn't we be, like, fighting for... I remember, like, just thinking... Yeah. Just thinking, oh, but you're rappers. You shouldn't be sexy. I remember like having that sort of thought process,
and then you saw the videos.
Yeah, and then that washed away completely.
Yeah, that
just
was
like, keep pouring champagne on that booty. Yeah.
So it's an interesting one, isn't it? Feminism. Once you get, I think, to a certain age, like both of us are in a situation now where we are the breadwinners and stuff. So there's an effect on gender characteristics that goes with that, right?
Yeah, well, I have this column in The Guardian, and so this one particular column I wrote was about Lisa had gone out for the evening and I was putting the kids to bed, and I'm just like dreadful at doing that because I like spending time with the kids, so like, and they know that I like them, that I like to hang out with them, so they just basically manipulate me to the point where like their bedtime's much later and shit. And then Lisa comes home and she's like absolutely like going nuts. And then when that article came out, somebody just went, oh my god, somebody tweeted me going, this is really progressive, isn't it? Men struggling to put their kids to bed, isn't this like great? And I was like, I'm not men.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm just talking about my situation. I'm a comedian, so I work evenings. So by nature of my work, I'm less experienced at being around in the evenings. And also, my wife doesn't work, so she's home more than I am. Do you know what I mean?
That's these just, are pragmatic.
Yeah, this is just how my life is. And I'm commenting. So I'm not going to not write about my experiences because they're not my dynamic in my house is not as progressive as it should be. Do you know what I mean? For your taste. So I was just sort of like, I think it's a. While I am all for being progressive, I don't agree with being prescriptive about that to everybody. Do you know what I mean? Because the truth is, the majority of people are in a lot of people are in a more traditional home setting. Do you know what I mean? And that should be recognised. Listen, obviously it's been recognised more so than any other dynamic. But what I mean is you don't just wash that away now. Do you know what I mean? It's now part of the spectrum.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? It's like, you know, and this is my issue about, like, cultural and political democracy, is where's it's all going to have more broad representation of everybody in society, but there still needs to be a reflection of reality as it is, right? So if you've got, like, loads of advertisers, as you get at the moment, and this has happened a lot of adverts, they've gone like, hey, why don't we just, like, really mix things up and then... Instead of having like two white people in a couple, have a mixed race couple, right? And that's great.
I'm strong in favour of that, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, interracial love is that's what I'm about, mate.
Well, do you remember there was like a long period where you didn't see that, right? And then so the first time you saw that, you go, well, that, like, I've never seen that before.
Yeah.
And then, but then there's like, it's all that. Like, there's so many adverts now where you think, like, actually, the radical thing to do now would be to have two people that are the same skin
Well, the thing is that it's weird, isn't it? Because the situation you get to is actually you get to the point where the most interracial couples you see are on TV, and then it doesn't reflect what you see in your life, like when you go out and about. Do you know what I mean? And I remember when I first started doing stand-up, which was like 10 years ago, and then I started getting to the point where you'd have meetings with production companies and stuff like that. And I remember, like, they'd say, oh, you know, have you got any ideas for scripted sitcoms? And the fact that my wife was white was like a thing. Was like a tick box for, you know, they were like, and then obviously it's unusual to see an interracial couple at the centre of a sitcom. And that has changed to the point where, by the time I got Reluctant Landlord, which my, you know, my sitcom did now for Scott, it sounds like I'm doing a plug, but anyway, this sitcom did. It's just not a thing. They just don't, you know, it's just not a thing. It's not even mentioned. It's like when we got to script stage or whatever, nobody gave a shit. Do you know what I mean? And so, but I remember like having conversations with going, and obviously it's like kind of interesting that it's there. You just don't see that.
Must be odd when that's just your life.
It's
not like you've done it to be wacky or, like a really great, really interesting plot feature.
No, exactly. and also sort of almost thinking like, I mean, don't get me wrong.
You just like white birds.
Yeah, of course. I'm just into white girls. You know, what can I do? But, you know, it's like, don't get me wrong. It does get you like, slightly interesting, I guess. There's plot lines that can come from it, by dint of the fact that sort of my wife is sort of experiencing Sri Lankan culture through her eyes by just getting to know my family and stuff, and there's all that kind of thing. But like you said, I hadn't thought of it as a thing. I thought of it as I've got no imagination, so I'm going to write from my experience. You know what I mean, and that is my experience. You know?
Is some of this a class issue? Because I think that one of the things about like the royal wedding as well was it did seem as though mixed race couples, for some people, seem to be invented that day between Meghan and Harry. Like, these guys, the new thing, mixed race couples, everyone's doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a thing about the way that you like, because I came to see you do like a new material bit. Obviously, you are a vegan.
Yes.
But like, again, vegans seem to annoy you. I thought I'd get in there first, mate. But I think vegans seem to annoy you. Like there's butcher the routine.
Yeah.
But it's based on that advert that where vegan where they were saying instead of using this word.
Yeah, PETA came out with this thing about how we shouldn't be using phrases that sort of incorporate cruelty to animals. So for example, they said you shouldn't say kill two birds with one stone anymore because it normalises violence against animals. And so they suggest.
It also normalises pragmatism.
Yes,
well. let's not forget that.
Yeah, stones aren't easy to come by. And the thing is like, it's a weird one because I sort of find myself annoyed by vegans and non-vegans in equal measure. Do you know what I mean? Because on the one hand, I just think that you need to be less militant about it, in my opinion, right? And I understand why they are militant about it, because they believe in it so strongly, and I understand that. And if you don't believe that animals should be killed for food, and you really strongly believe that, and that is in you feel that in your soul almost, and then the whole of society is like, nah, man, we don't give a shit. Mm. I understand why that would upset you, but the way you've got to see it is, well, okay, well, what's my viewpoint here? Well, I'd like more people to become vegan. Is the way that I'm doing this going to make that happen? Probably not. You know, if you're militant about it in the way that I just don't think it is it more likely, possibly less, a bit lower impact, but is it more likely if I have a conversation with you, if you ask me about my veganism and I chat to you about my reasons for doing it, is that more like, and include you in the conversation and not dismiss you because you like bacon, do you know what I mean? Is that more likely to get you on side? Probably, and I'm not saying it in the terms of I'm trying to convert everyone I speak to, but I just think you end up with animosity, and that's why non-vegans end up hating I say hate all the time. I mean dislike. Take the piss out of it.
It's
weird
because I'm sort of the other side of that, is that I am a meat eater. I'm comfortable with my decision to eat meat. Yes. So therefore, I'm not challenged by veganism.
Yeah.
And then suddenly noticed like loads of comedians like really shitting on vegans to the point where the routine I've now written is about that.
Yeah,
it's
about
like, well, I'm secure in my meat heterosexuality.
Yeah.
For want of a better phrase, I'm not saying that game.
Yeah.
You know,
it sort of feels like a long-winded way of saying bestiality. But, I totally. I mean, I think that the thing is that, you know, there are two types of. I don't know. I think there are some meat eaters who are comfortable with what they do, and they've made their choices, and that is what it is, what it is, and that's where you fall into. And I think there are other meat eaters who sort of kind of feel like they probably shouldn't be eating meat.
Yeah.
But it's just too difficult because meat's nice, and I get that.
So their reaction is like a defensive one.
Yeah, I think so.
They're projecting their doubts.
Yeah, it's like how as a smoker I'd react to an ex-smoker, sort of like
holding a mirror up.
Yeah, basically, and I think that sort of pisses people off. But like, and so non-vegans get very, very aggressive about it, and I think it's just sort of I think there's fault on both sides. But the truth of it is that like. Vegans are so overrepresented in, and I know that sounds like but you know, you and I were talking about it the other day.
2%.
It's still quite a small proportion.
I thought it was more than 2%. Yeah. I would have put it 7-10. Yeah. But.
And for the people, you know, for the number of backs that are getting raised as a result of veganism, it's sort of disproportionate to the number of people that are actually becoming vegan. Do you know what I mean?
What is that? Is that 2 in every 100?
What is?
Well, that's
2%. You asked me if 2% is 2 in every 100. Yes. I could confirm.
You're a maths teacher. I was an English teacher. I could put a comma in that sentence.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
I definitely couldn't pull the stat out of it. Fuck. Can you imagine going back to teaching now? Like how, like the basics.
Well, how... I went out for a drink with a couple of guys I used to teach with, and I don't know, man. Like, when I was teaching. And I was like, sort of told people I'm leaving to do stand-up full time. A lot of teachers were saying to me, I wish I could get out of this. It's getting worse and worse every year. And I didn't know whether that was just perception or that's just, you know, like how teachers, people always think things are getting worse and worse every year.
Quite a moany job.
Yes, it is. It is. But it is though,
yeah.
I mean, like, and then, but then what I did notice during my time of teaching is, first of all, obviously the workload is insane. You get the goalposts moved. If I'm being waffly, you can edit this out, can't you? But the other thing was is that the thing I noticed, and I don't know if you found this in your time teaching, is I became increasingly scared of the parents as a teacher. Like when I started teaching, if you bollocked a kid, right, they would they would be nervous because their parents would find out. Yeah. And then it started to move towards. I remember like I was head of sixth form in my like last year of last couple few years of doing teaching. And I remember there was this kid that got like this sixth form girl that got just bullied shitless, right? One day in the common room, just horrible, like proper mean girl style. Group of girls got around her and like really horrendous to her. And I called every one of them into my office and I said, you know, if that happens again, I'll kick you out of sixth form. You know, I was very calm. I didn't ever raise my voice, but I was very firm about it. I just said, it happens again, you're gone. That's it. I'm sorry. No tolerance. Zero tolerance. And then I went off to teach a lesson and I came back and there was a mum waiting outside my office, right? A mum of one of the girls who had been guilty of doing this thing, and she said, "I want to speak to you now," and came into my office and just started shouting at me for the way that I'd spoken to her daughter, and her daughter had found her in floods of tears over the way I'd spoken to her and all this. And the reason I mention that is that that's not a one off. I was increasingly finding that parents were backing their kids to the point where, because the truth is. The authority of a teacher is a complete fallacy.
Well, see, this is a thing where I wonder if it like made your politics more transient, is that you know from having taught, right, there is that idea that everyone would like to hold on to, is be lovely, you know, be totally like nurturing all the time. But having taught, you know that there is a place for tough love, right?
Yes.
And there is a place for like disciplinarian.
100%, man.
I actually raised my hand like I was going to slap
someone. I wouldn't go that far. But no, I totally 100% agree with you. And I think like, you know, I was never a particularly... I wasn't a strict teacher in the traditional sense of the term, but I would have expectations, and I think kids need expectations, and they need to know that if they fall short of those expectations, there will be repercussions. Do you know what I mean? And I think
it does sound sinister, though.
It does sound sinister. There will be repercussions. But they respect that. Do you know what I mean? Because like, the thing is,
is that what a mum come up? Did you say, look, there's going to be repercussions?
Yeah. I said, listen, I will strike with furious vengeance. But
Mr. Raganator is ready to bring a hammer down on any motherfucker dare step outside this joint.
But I think kids respect. The one thing I found is that if the kids believed that you like them, and had their best interests at heart, they would accept anything from you in terms of like bollockings, detentions, punishments.
See, I think interestingly, I think that that's something you brought into your stand-up because, like, even if you're being like a bit mean and stuff, that's what people always perceive about you. Just exactly what you said, that if you like them and have their best interests at heart,
yeah,
it's a really interesting place to do stand-up from. I think, and I totally agree about the parents. I think what they act is they act like the kid is They act like an agent, and the kid is their like main client.
Yes, yeah,
it's
yeah.
a gun act that plays arenas.
Yeah, yeah.
So they just fuss around the fucking kid all day long. And if one thing happens that slightly affects the kid's chi, they'll be coming up going, why are you doing that? And they're almost doing it performatively, so the kid can see them doing it.
The thing is, as you say, I sort of think to myself, I get that, because like you and I are both like parents, and you sort of think, if I don't ever want my kids to have a sad face, like instinctively, you don't want that.
No.
But at the same time, the truth is, sometimes it's good for them to have a sad face. Do you know what I mean? It's good for them to... It's like they have to experience disappointment and whatever in their
and
lives.
And like they fucked up.
Yeah, yeah. It's gutting to sort of admit that. You know, when you first have your baby, you go, I don't want you to ever have a moment's unhappiness.
Yeah, yeah.
Ever. The truth is, that's not you don't really want that. Do you know what I mean? You want your kid to be fucking well adjusted.
Well, that's the hard thing is in like in a society of instant gratification, you've got to play long game.
Yeah.
And that's a hard thing to do with your kid. Like, I am a complete, like, I do, you know, I talk a good game in terms of tough love when it comes to my son. And I do it with my son as well. Like, he lobbed something at a restaurant the other day.
Right.
And there's one.
And that's difficult, it's funny.
But there's
that's
one,
funny.
There's the male part of me that just thought it was funny.
Yeah.
Because I saw the kind of fucking knuckleheaded look that fell across his face, like, moments before he did it. He just lobbed it.
Yeah.
And I, it was my job to
even
tell him,
using the word lob suggests
yeah, he
lobbed, pride.
It was. Sorry, just interrupting the chat briefly here. I hope you're enjoying it. I'm doing a show on Thursday, the 24th of October at Leeds City Varieties. First time I did a tour show up north, it was like to like 60 people. This room, I did a support show with Catherine Ryan there, and I just thought, fuck, I would love to get to the point where I could fill this room or have a busy night in this room. So that one, Thursday, the 24th of October, if you do live in Leeds, it's selling all right, but it's going to take a bit of going to fill it, but I'm hopeful, you know, I mean... It's not till October, Jeff. Some of you are probably thinking, Jeff, we've got... There's so much stuff that's got to happen between now and then, Jeff. Probably some of you might even have children in that time. But I think, you know, if you are very close to becoming a parent for the first time, just in between your anxiety about that huge change in your life, if you could log on and buy some tickets to see my tour, I think that would be also important. And another thing is with the iTunes ratings, I've had quite a few people going on giving me fours recently. Now, I don't mind a 4-star. That's 80%, isn't it? But the problem is like all these other iTunes, they just get wall-to-wall 5-star reviews because they're just, well, you know, I'm trying to do something different. So if you just get a second, a nice little 5-star review would be very handy. Thank you very much. So let's get back to the chat with Ramesh Ranganathan. I mean, you interesting talking about gender as well. Like, how much has it affected you having three boys? I.e., this idea we all come, you know, we probably have the same stuff at university. You know, these same liberal left views where you go, you know, genders, constructs, you know, and by the time you had three boys, that must have either solidified or challenged that.
Yes, to a degree. I mean, the one thing I am always a bit wary of is that in our house there's like four lads. And this poor woman that's like, do you know what I mean? You have to make so many value judgments, do you know what I mean?
And you also, you become conscious that the way that you react as a man and a woman particularly is shaping a lot of what they expect. So then I find, you know, you sort of find yourself sometimes going like, you know, it's constantly being said that, you know, daddy has to go and earn the pennies and stuff because I'm out working more. But, my wife does work. Then I was going, well, mummy earns the pennies too. But then even the way I've said that, I've realised...
I mean, that's not good enough, is it? Like, but it's funny, I do worry about that, man, because I sort of think, like, for all of our shit-talking about, you know, like, trying to bring up our kids right and to appreciate all different roles and blah, 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 you know, and men don't do this and women, you know, these things aren't defined.
Yeah.
I sort of think they're seeing that every single day, reinforced by how things are at their house. Do you know what I mean? And constantly, Lisa and I are very conscious of, like, counteracting that in our language. If I was to tell you that we do that as much as our lifestyles reinforce it the other way, that's utter bullshit.
But every once in a while, you wear a dress or something.
Correct,
do a high-pitched voice.
Yes, yeah. And Lisa will put on a strap on and peg the shit out of me, We have to do that. You have to do that for your kids.
So she just comes down and just do a fake deep voice. Go, hey, rubbish, you bitch, where's my food?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, wife.
Yeah, and because that's exactly how I would talk to her. Like,
so if you go, that's the thing, if you're not able to do it often, you do have to go really
really fucking redress the balance.
Oh, thank you for this. I deserve this. I'm such a bad boy. That ended up.
I liked it. That could have. I reckon we could have riffed with that for another 45 minutes or so.
We could, but I wasn't sensing, like, because obviously you realised that from your point of view, you've got a lot more skin in the game in that imagery than I have. I'm sort of like not sensing that it's necessary for me to take that.
No, but I liked what you did. I appreciate the courage you showed.
Thanks, man.
Bearing in mind that that image didn't involve you or your members of your family at all.
I'll never do it, really, I fucking run a tight ship. So. We got some audience questions in, first of which slightly relates to that. This is very simple, and I do like this from my audience. Any kind of question, there's no real.
So the remit is any question.
Anything. Okay. What's the most pain you've ever been in? That's from Dr. Beak. What's the most? Was it when your wife did you with a strap on to challenge gender roles in front of your children?
I tore my frenulum. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Yeah, I ripped that.
That's the thing in your.
It's like the little bit that's like the under, you know, like that.
Of your dick?
Yeah.
Fuck, how did you do that?
During sex.
Oh my god, were you aware when it happened?
I was fully aware, yes. I was fully aware.
So in agony?
Yes, instantly I was in agony. And then.
Vinegar strokes?
No, didn't get anywhere near those.
Oh, okay. Probably better, otherwise yes, you would may have done something you'd always regret.
Yeah, some sort of Thousand Island. But why did I say that? Anyway,
that's definitely staying in.
So the thing was, it was not just the pain; it was the terror because there's a lot of blood, like a lot of blood.
Doctor Beak, by the way, is now regretting that.
Yes, sure. But listen, if you ask those questions,
I didn't think there'd be blood. I mean, that shocked me.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of blood, and then obviously, dude, I've got like a hard on, and then I've torn the.
Yeah,
I mean, it's all been all blood has been redirected, hasn't it?
Yeah, fuck. So you go to A&E or was it?
No, so I sort of phoned up the NHS helpline. The whole time, the girl I was with was just going, "Please don't pass out, please don't pass out," because she's just freaking out that I was just going to like slump to the. I phoned them up and they said, "You just need to." It's just normal fit. Like once the Hulk shrinks down to sort of Bruce Banner, you'll be fine.
Or the Bruce Banner down to Ant-Man.
Yes. Yeah. If once that happens, you'll be all right. But you just got to just be a bit careful.
Yeah.
So then I just thought I want to go to the doctor because what if it like grows at a right angle or something?
I'd be thinking stuff like that.
Yeah.
Totally.
So I went to our family doctor. I mean,
I might have driven personally.
Yeah, yeah. So,
NHS drop-in centre in Yarmouth, maybe.
I didn't do that. I just went to our family doctor. That's known us for years and years and years.
Your and bloody dick in your hands.
I showed him my dick, and he said, "Oh, that'll be all right. Just leave it." And I thought, why have I shown him my dick?
You could have explained it. My wife is. This is from Faisal in Aberdeen.
How do you spell that?
F A I S A L. I should have just spelled Aberdeen. Faisal, comedy
maybe?
Value. I should have just spelled Aberdeen. That was the gag. Missed it. Faisal, my wife is giving birth soon. Do I need to be at the birth? I'm willing to do it, but I just think we're both going into it that way because that's the done thing. She doesn't want me to see her bits like that, and rather would I. Doesn't make sense. Neither would I think. Should I just bite the bullet and suggest it, see how it flies? Well, the problem here, Faisal, is that if you've read the mood music wrong, this will never be forgotten.
No.
Like, if she does definitely want you to be in that room, and you go, babe, I think I know what you want. I'm just going to work the corridors.
I mean, I think that you need to do whatever it is your wife wants you to do.
Yeah.
Because Listen, it just is how it's got to be, man. If she wants you to do a handstand on the bed with your head looking directly into her vagina, you will have to do that because she's going through a lot of shit here. The truth is, Faisal, you don't want to be there.
Yeah.
That is clear.
And she's projecting that onto his wife.
Yeah, you're obviously projecting that onto your wife. Because also the other thing that you're sort of neglecting to mention is it's possible to be at the birth and not look at your wife's bits at all. I mean,
you hear stuff,
but you just stay away from the business end. Okay, you can do that.
Yeah.
You can be at the birth. I'll be honest with you, it's difficult, but you can avoid seeing stuff. What you will hear, all I would say is, a pair of noise-canceling headphones are a worthwhile investment.
Well, just like, as you go, what? Imagine the other time when she actually tries to speak to you directly.
No, but you can get those ones where if you just put your hand on the side of it, it dips out the noise.
Okay. Because they might be going, oh, you were shouting.
The funniest thing is, like, after we had our first son, we were in, he was, like, struggling to feed a little bit. So Lisa stayed in the hospital a bit longer than normal. And I remember sitting with her, and we were sort of just having a chat, and then the one of the midwives came in and said, do you want any toast or anything? And Lisa said, oh no, I'm all right. And I went, yeah, I'm fine, thank you. And she looked at me as if to say, the idea that I would even think about your nourishment.
Well, that is a very important point to make to Faisal, is that you've got to think about how do you deal with status drops?
Yeah.
Because truthfully, I would say, and this is contentious, I would say midwives probably would prefer the old 90-50 style.
100%.
Just get the fucking man out of the room.
Yeah.
He made this.
I just think that you're so surplus to requirement. In fact, you're a hindrance. Yeah. That everybody there is dealing with you being a hindrance. And your wife doesn't even really want you there. But she just wants you
she
there.
She doesn't want you to not be there.
No, exactly. Yeah. That is a truth. Yeah, that's nail on there. That is exactly what it is, because you don't help. What most
people think. Our final one here, it's not a husband stuff, but like we like to do, I don't like to call it mental health anymore, because I'm trying to do a bit more of a light touch. I'm hoping that it's implicit, right? So this is from Alan in Wigan. Is my wife cheating on me?
Oh my God.
She is suddenly happy and in good shape after many years of being unhappy and chubby. It's definitely not because
she certainly should be cheating on you.
Yeah. She won't, she is now.
You're throwing around words like chubby.
I mean, like, even if I thought my wife's cheating on me, I'd still observe like certain decorum.
Yeah, listen, I mean,
she struggled with the baby weight.
Yeah, even if
my wife,
I walked into my house and my wife was absolutely getting
ragged.
Yeah, absolutely fuck silly. I would not call her chubby. I mean.
The stakes are so high at that point.
Just absolutely ridiculous. It's even worse to do it then, because the adrenaline's flowing, she's turned on. Who knows what she'd do to you? She might just fucking kill you, behead you.
That'd be awful.
Then finish the bloke off.
If the guy just beat you to death with his massive cock. What a way to go.
Just bludgeoned to death wife's lover's cock because you called her chubby.
Like, just all of, like, the worst male neuroses coming to light, like, defeating battles, Moloch. And you go, like, that'd be a tough one to explain, wouldn't it, the service as well. He lived...
He died doing what he loved, defending himself from a huge car.
I feel bad. Look, Alan.
Sorry, I didn't even listen.
What it seems is, he's like, and we've seen this in all of our wives and stuff, there'll be periods where, but essentially what's happened is they've gone into a good period of form emotionally and psychologically.
Mm-hmm. She's in a purple patch.
She's lost a bit of weight. She's looking fantastic. You know, Emma's looking fantastic at the moment. Your missus always looks fantastic. My missus always looks fantastic.
Yeah,
this is what starts to happen when you start talking.
You can edit that out.
Yeah, we're very lucky in that respect. So, but it does sometimes make you think, well, I'm not feeling that happy. I'm a bit fat right now. Why are you happy?
Yeah.
And then maybe
because if you're normally your lives ebb and flow together, and now you've got a situation where, I mean, Alan, you haven't given us any indication of how you're looking, but you haven't said anything about how you're looking better, or you've dropped.
He's called Alan. He's from Wigan. This is a massive stereotype. I'm going to think his BMI is on the wrong side.
He's on a gradual decline, isn't he?
Yeah.
So that does raise questions. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The other thing is, you know, we are making. Are we allowed to now make the assumption if somebody's lost weight, that's definitely a positive thing? I mean, we still. That's
she might be ill.
Oh my God.
You should be.
That's all I
meant. You shouldn't be checking her phone though. You should be checking her for lumps. Ha ha ha. No, oh, you didn't mean that.
No, what I meant was, you know, it's like, I read this article recently, by this woman who said that she's lost weight inadvertently.
Hmm.
And people are going up to her saying, you've lost weight, that's great. You look. Yeah. Well, how come you're looking so good? And she finds it quite annoying.
Mm.
So all I'm saying is...
She protests a little bit too much for
maybe,
me. I'm calling that.
I mean, you've not even read the article. You're basically just lost weight.
Yeah, but I've got a very cynical view of people like that. I've just lost weight in a Vernie. It's just got so tiresome having to field those complaints.
I mean, Alan, what I would say is, you know, what you've got to look at is a potential scenario. So it is possible that your wife one day was out shopping. She caught a reflection in a shop window or something and thought to herself, do you know what? I don't feel like I'm living my best life here. And I, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to start exercising. I'm going to start eating a bit healthier.
Mm.
I'm going to start looking at my wardrobe and, you know, start taking a bit more pride in myself, possibly.
For him, Alan, this is...
It could be. We don't know. It could be like, you know, it could be like...
It could be for you, bro.
Yeah. And so she's worked away. She's looking great.
Yeah.
And good for her, by the way. She's looking great. She's on top of the world. And then the first thing you jump to...
Yeah.
The first thing you say...
Disgusting.
Is that is she cheating on me?
Yeah.
After she's... I mean...
Sniffing her clothes.
Yeah. Checking her phone.
Checking for another man's musk.
Oh, my God. Sniffing around like a little fucking...
I would... I would say this, Alan. I think often this feeling comes from... That you are not being the husband that you wish to be, right?
You're cheating.
If this was Jeremy Kyle... This would be an open ocean.
Yes, Alan's cheating on his missus.
Yeah, Alan from Wigan is definitely fucking dumb. If you're living in Wigan and you're married to someone called Alan,
you need to check his phone. Check his
mic.
Because Alan has rewarded your weight loss with being a swordsman.
It's an absolute piece of shit. I have done this before. Don't worry, I know this. Like, these are real people's questions. But this is the problem. You step into this, I'm not going to necessarily take it. But I think actually it's not far off it, actually. I know we're taking the piss. I think we've covered all the potential angles here.
I think it's a shame that you've jumped to that. And you might have done it for joke purposes to send in to Jeff.
Yeah.
But if you haven't, then shame on you.
Shame on Alan.
Yeah.
Okay, well, listen, mate. Thank you so much for coming on. What most people think. I'd like to. I suspect with the listeners' questions, there might be follow-ups.
Yes,
I'd love to think that, you know, sort of just in person, legally, morally, you'll back me up on a number of these issues when they do. You know, in terms of aftercare.
Sure. Listen, mate. What I was going to say to you as soon as we finish recording this is, please, can you keep me up to date with all of those situations? Yeah. Because I don't want any of them to feel like they haven't been. They properly don't feel, addressed,
you know? This is men's advice, and sometimes it will be brutal. And actually, I think we took the piss with Alan. I think we actually got somewhere accurate, somewhere positive.
Yeah, I mean, enjoy your wife, Alan.
That was
an insane thing to say. But you know what I mean? I mean, spiritually, emotionally, and sexually.
Enjoy your wife like the other guy. This is bad. Listen, Rory's Dragon Over, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having your podcast. I just want to say, people listening to this won't necessarily need me to say this, but you are one of the best in the game, and I want that to be recognised. Okay?
Thanks, mate. I now feel really bad about that joke I made earlier when I hoodwinked you into that corner.
Oh, the mum thing. I think it was a good exposure of my vanity for you to go the most, you said, because you were pretty effusive, the most bankable in the around, didn't you?
Yeah.
And I fucking stepped out.
Man, most bankable comics out in the UK. Well, I do think that about you, but if I now say the response is, the kind of listeners I got, they will be throwing, having enjoyed this hour immensely, they will now, but if we start basically noshing each other off.
Yes, they'll be absolutely disgusting. And also, I can't imagine... anybody that listens to your podcast is a fan of mine. I just find.
Oh no, there will be.
Let me know. Tweet me at.
Yes.
Ramesh Ranga.
Yeah.
Alan, tweet me though. I would like to follow.
Yeah, Alan. Definitely want to follow up on Alan. Yeah. And
please do tweet, because honestly, mate, I know we sort of took the piss, but I do care about what's going on in your marriage.
I'll keep you abreast. And watch the next episode of Ranga Nation, which is on Sunday.
Sunday night, 9 o'clock, BBC Two.
Cool. Cheers, man.
Thanks, mate.
Okay, so that is the end of the show, and what a great guest Romesh was. Really enjoyed that. Really enjoyed the in-depth chat and the pissing about with the letters. And anybody, and I know I don't always have time to do all of the people that send in letters, but I do read all of them. When I get a minute, I will try and respond to everyone that I can. By the way, if you're wondering why I've had a strange sort of hushed tone in all the bits where it's been just me, I'm recording this bit while my wife and kid are asleep upstairs. So as much as I give it a big end, I am actually the considerate father. But I will be playing drums shortly after this. So it just remains for us to do an iTunes review. So I was saying earlier about a few of these 4-star reviews where people can't bring themselves to give me a 5. So I'm sort of, you know, I'm still grateful that people have taken the time to write me a review. But here's a good example from somebody called The Boxing Brain. It's quite a long one. I think this guy is going to have, you know, quite a sort of, you know, considered kind of voice. So I first saw Jeff on the MASH report and thought, although I describe myself as left wing, probably more towards the centre now. I'm 40, of course you are, mate. You're 41. And well paid. He says he's well paid. I like the honesty. Had you got a mortgage? I mean, we all drift towards it. We all go that way. You never know where you'll end up, mate. You've already drifted centre. You could end up fucking UKIP. I like the fact he was giving a brackets, very funny, close brackets, right-wing's perspective among all the left-wing hand-wringing. This show offers more of the same. Jeff's right of centre and unashamedly conservative views, but done in a humorous way which acknowledges the absurdity of political arguments from all corners. The bit on men and male issues at the end of each episode is well done and strikes the right balance of taking the piss and taking the issue seriously. The only reason I haven't posted a 5-star review is because, as a petty member of the London Liberal elite, I can't bring myself to give a Brexit voting Tory 5 stars. Sorry, Jeff. But look, we're all brothers and sisters together. Let's get a new Tory leader. Let's get Brexit done. And let's get on with winning the World Cup and just be, you know, bring the country. What the fuck? I have no, this is far too late to be signing out. I'm recording this. Like, it's at 11 p.m. at night. My brain has already stopped. It's already stopped. I'm now, this is Dream Jeff doing this. But look, as I say, thanks to anybody that takes the time to buy tour tickets, download this. I really do appreciate it. And I'll see you again. This is why, look, it's too late for me to be saying this stuff. I'm going to have to keep this really basic now to finish the podcast without fucking up any more stuff. I will do another podcast in 2 weeks, probably on a Thursday, latest Friday. Thank you very much for listening.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.